an Osho talk.
Dogen, the Zen master, a search and a fulfillment.
Talks on Zen, number 4.
Dogen said, "In the practice of the highest supreme wisdom, it is most difficult to meet prominent masters. Whether men or women, they must be those who have realized something indescribable. This is the realization of the essence of the way. Therefore, they lead and benefit others, setting aside no causality or making no difference between the self and others. Once we have met a master, we must practice the way, aloof from worldly relations and grudging a spare time, even in thinking, non-thinking, and neutral thinking. Therefore, we should train ourselves as single-heartedly as if we were saving our head from a burning fire. A Zen master who has dropped away his body and mind is none other than ourselves. It is inevitably by sincerity and piety that we realize and receive the essence of our master's law. These qualities neither come from outside nor rise from inside, but from attaching more importance to the law than to our body, or from renouncing the world and entering the way. If we attach a little more importance to our body than to the law, we shall be unable to realize and receive the way. When someone has realized the great law and the essence of the Buddhas and patriarchs, we serve him, reverently prostrating ourselves. Sakyamuni Buddha said, "When you meet a master who expounds the supreme wisdom, do not consider his birth, look at his appearance, nor dislike his faults, or worry about his behavior. Rather, out of respect for his wisdom, treat him with a large sum of money, or celestial meals and flowers, or reverently prostrate yourself before him 3 times a day, giving him no cause for worry, and you will surely find the supreme Bodhi wisdom." Dogen continued, "Both men and women can realize the way. In any case, the realization of the way should be respected regardless of sex. This is an extremely excellent rule in the way. Even a little girl of 7 can become the teacher of the 4 classes of Buddhists if she practices and realizes the law. We should make a venerative offering to her as if to the Buddhas. This is a traditional manner in Buddhism. I feel sorry for those who have never known or received it personally."
It is one of the most ancient problems, how to recognize the master. Because without the master there is almost no way. I say almost, because perhaps 1 person in a million may reach to the truth without the Master. But it is just accidental. It cannot be made a rule, it is just an exception. It simply proves the rule. And the great concern of masters has been to explain to the people the ways of recognizing the Master. Because the Master is the way. Unless you have seen someone self-realize, you will not trust yourself that you can be realized. Once you have seen a Buddha, an enlightened one, a tremendous flame suddenly starts blossoming in you, that if this beauty, this grace, this wisdom, this blissfulness can happen to any man, then why it cannot happen to me? As far as human beings, we have the same seeds and the same potentiality. But a seed can remain a seed and may never become a flower. Although it was every possibility available, but he avoided it. Rather than disappearing in the soil, he remained safe, hiding in a stone cave, thinking that it is too rainy outside, worrying that it is too sunny outside, fearing the unknown. He feels cozy in the closed silence of the cave, but there he cannot grow. There he will simply get rotten. There he will simply remain something that could have been a beautiful manifestation, unmanifested, a song unsung, a poetry unwritten. A life unlived, this makes it very essential to find a man who can provoke in you the challenge to attain to your heights. The Master is nothing but a challenge. That if it has happened to me, it can happen to you. And the authentic Master, because there are so many teachers propounding doctrines, beliefs, philosophies, The authentic master is not concerned with words, is not concerned with beliefs, atheism or theism, is not concerned even with God or heaven and hell. The authentic master is concerned only with one single thing, to provoke you to see your potentiality, to see inwards. His presence makes you silent. His words deepen your silence. His very being slowly starts melting your falseness, your mask, your personality. What is the problem of the seed? That is the problem of you too. The problem of the seed is that the cover is protective. To lose the cover, one becomes vulnerable. The seed is perfectly happy, covered, but he does not know that there are more skies beyond skies to be discovered, that unless you go to the beyond, you have not lived. Because you have not known the world of stars, and you have not lived as a flower dancing in the rain and in the sun and in the wind, you have not heard the music of existence. You remained closed in your safety and security. And exactly the same is the problem with man. Every man is a bodhisattva. The word bodhisattva means in essence a Buddha. The distance between bodhisattva and Buddha is the distance between the seed and the flower. It is not much. It just needs a little courage. But hidden in the darkness of a cave, who is going to give you the encouragement? Who is going to pull you out from your security? The master's function is to give you a taste of insecurity, to give you a taste of openness. And just once you know that openness, insecurity, they are basic ingredients of freedom. Without them you cannot open your wings and fly in the sky of infinity. It is absolutely essential to avoid the teachers. They are fake masters. It is very difficult because they speak the same language. So you have not to listen to the words, You have to listen to the heart. You have not to listen to their doctrines, their logic and arguments. You have to listen to their grace, their beauty, their eyes. You have to listen and feel the aura that surrounds a master. Just like a cool breeze, it touches you. Once you have found your master, you have found the key to open the treasure of your potentialities. Dzogchen is talking about this ancient and eternal problem. Dzogchen says, in the practice of the highest supreme wisdom, it is most difficult to meet prominent masters. It is difficult. And if it was difficult in Dzogchen's time, it has become more difficult nowadays. The world has become more worldly. The education has become irreligious. The science predominates, and science does not believe in the inside of your being. Our whole culture, for the first time in the history, is absolutely materialistic. It does not matter whether you are in the East or in the West. The same educational pattern has spread all over the globe. Although you may go traditionally, formally, just as a social conformity, to the temple, to the mass, but deep down you don't have any trust. Deep down there is only doubt. Deep down you are going into the temple not because of any realization, not because you have to show your gratitude to God. You are going there out of fear of the society in which you live. You don't want to be an outcast. It is simply a social conformity. It became very clear when in 1917 Soviet Union went through a revolution. Before the revolution, Russia was one of the most orthodox countries in the world. All kinds of superstitions were believed. There were many saints, great hierarchy of church. It was absolutely independent from the Vatican. It has its own church. But after the revolution, just within 5 years, all those beliefs cultivated for centuries disappeared. Nobody bothered anymore about God. That does not mean that everybody has understood that there is no God. That simply means the society has changed and you have to change with society. Another social conformity. I don't believe in Russian atheists, just as I don't believe in any theist, Hindu, Christian or Mohammedan. For the simple reason, because their religion is not their own experience, is not their own love affair. It is just a conformity to remain in the crowd respectable. What is your religion except conformity? But by conformity nobody has found religion. And today it has become almost an universal conformity, because science overrules the mind, logic prevails on our thinking, logic denies anything irrational, science denies anything eternal. Obviously, it has become more and more difficult to find an authentic master. Even to find a teacher is difficult, because that has become out of date. A teacher will be talking about the Upanishads, will be talking about the Bible, will be talking about the Torah, we'll be talking about the Quran. All are out of date. Do you think a newspaper 20 centuries afterwards will have any significance? Just within one day, its significance is finished. In the morning you were waiting so curiously for the newspaper, by the evening it is thrown out. It has served its purpose, a curiosity to know what is happening around. Just a new and most technical way of gossiping. Now it is no more possible to continue the old type of gossiping, because people are living so far away from each other. Newspapers, radio, and television are new forms of gossiping. They spread all kind of nonsense and stupidity to people. This used to be the work of the priest, of the teacher in the past. But in the past, even in the past, as Dogen says, it is very difficult to meet prominent masters. But they have never ceased to be. Even today it is possible, although it has become more difficult to find a master. because the whole world and its climate, its mind has turned away from the inner search. One who goes into the inner search goes alone, without any support from the society. In fact, the society creates all kinds of problems for the man who is going in search of himself. People simply laugh that don't be foolish. Go in search of money, go in search of a beautiful woman, go in search to be the richest man in the world, go in search to be the prime minister of a country. Where are you going and what you will do even if you find yourself? You will be simply stuck. Once you have found yourself, what you are going to do? You cannot eat it. It is just useless. The whole endeavor of the centuries has suddenly become completely useless. Because so very few people have dared to cross the line that the boundary creates around you, the society creates around you. These few people have found the very source of life. They have found that we are not born with our death and we are not going to die with our death. Neither birth nor death. Our essence is eternal, beginningless, endless. Birth and deaths have happened 1,001 times. They are just episodes. Very small things compared to our eternity. But whenever anybody finds this eternity, it starts transforming him. He becomes a new man in the sense that his vision is clear. He does not belong to any crowd. He cannot be a Christian or a Hindu or a Mohammedan because he knows in the innermost core we are all part of one existence. All divisions are stupid. How a man who has realized himself can belong to a crowd, can be a member to a crowd? He becomes a peak of consciousness standing alone like the Everest. He is enough unto himself, and to find him is certainly difficult, but not impossible. You can make it impossible if you go in search of a master with certain prejudices, with certain criterions already decided by your mind. For example, a jnana, even if he comes across Buddha, will not be able to see him. His eyes are covered with his so-called Jainism. He can respect only a man like Mahavira. That is his criterion. And the trouble is, every realized soul is so unique, you cannot make a criterion. You will have to be more subtle, more intelligent. The Jaina cannot accept Buddha as self-realized because he still wears clothes. His idea of self-realization is that one renounces everything, even the clothes. One stands naked. But please remember, even an actor can stand naked. Don't make it a criterion. Mahavir is unique. He loves to be naked in the open air under the sky and the stars. It is beautiful, but it is not a criterion. Gautam Buddha eats once a day. Now, that is not a criterion that if somebody eats twice a day, he cannot be understood as a Buddha. But even our so-called intelligent and our so-called religious people like Mahatma Gandhi make such stupid criterions. According to him, a man of realization cannot drink tea. And all the Buddhist masters have been drinking tea. It has been their discovery. It was Bodhidharma who discovered tea. The name tea comes from the mountain Ta in China, where Bodhidharma was meditating. And it has remained the same in different languages, just slight changes. In Hindi, it is chai. In Marathi, it is cha. In Chinese, it is ta. In English, it has become tea. But 1,000 masters have never denied tea as something unspiritual. On the contrary, Zen has in their monasteries a special tea house. And when they go for tea, it is called a tea ceremony. And they had transformed a simple act of drinking tea into a beautiful meditation. You have to leave your shoes outside as if you are entering into a temple. And there is a master who is going to lead the ceremony. Then everybody sits down in the silence of the monastery. And the tea is prepared on the samovar, and everybody listens to the music of the samovar, boiling the tea. It is becoming meditation. Watchfulness is meditation. What you watch does not matter. Then the master, with great grace, brings the tea to everybody, pours the tea with immense awareness, consciousness, carefulness, respectfulness, and everybody receives the tea as if something divine is being received. Then in that silence, sipping the tea, and the very ordinary thing has become a spiritual experience. Nobody can speak in the tea house. Silence is the rule. When you put down your cups and saucers, you also bow down with gratitude to existence. He was only a symbol. But in Mahatma Gandhi's ashram, you could not drink tea. You cannot fall in love with a woman. You have to eat every day with your meal neem leaves, which are the bitterest leaves in the world, just to destroy your taste. Because scriptures say that tastelessness is a criterion of spirituality. It can be a criterion of stupidity. It cannot be a criterion of spirituality. Otherwise all buffaloes will be spiritual. Have you watched buffaloes? They always chew the same grass. Showing no way whether they are happy or unhappy. Remaining so content and aloof. And the whole day it continues, chewing and chewing. And it cannot be very delicious. You can try. Once in a while it is good to try what other species around the world are doing. But
I will not say that tastelessness has anything to do with religion. On the contrary, the more you become meditative, the more your taste becomes deeper. Every sense becomes more sensitive. You hear more, you hear better. Your touch starts becoming warmer. Just touch few people's hands and you will see the difference. Few people's hands are warm. The warm hands show that they are ready to give, share. The warmth is their energy moving towards you. It is really a love symbol. But few people's hands will be just like holding a dead branch of a tree. Nothing moves in their hands. But these people have been called in the past as spiritual. More dead you are, the more spiritual. Don't eat for the taste's sake. You cannot believe that Buddhist scriptures have 33 million rules for a person to be spiritual. At least I cannot become a spiritual just because I cannot count that many rules. I cannot remember that much. 33 million rules. Whenever I count on my fingers, and after the third finger I always get lost. But that does not mean that I cannot be spiritual. Arithmetic has nothing to do with spirituality. And what are those rules? One instance I will give to you. A young monk is going to spread Buddha's word to the masses. Before taking his leave, he touches Buddha's feet and asks him if there is something to be said to him, because he will not be able to see him up to the second monsoon comes. Buddha said, yes, I have few instructions for you. One thing is, never look more than 4 feet ahead of you. The man said, but why? Buddha said, it is to avoid women. At the most you can see their feet, then just move. Don't look at their face. Keep your eyes glued to the ground. Now, such a man cannot see the stars. Such a man cannot see the sunset or the sunrise. Such a man is utterly cut off from existence. His sensitivity has been killed. He has eyes, but he is almost blind. Just eyes that can see only 4 feet ahead. His tremendous capacity of seeing is reduced to 4 feet only. The young monk asks that if once in a while I forget, or there is some special situation in which I have to see a woman, what should I do? Buddha said, close your eyes. I am especially concerned because once you have seen a beautiful woman's eye or a beautiful man, you can close your eyes, but you cannot forget the face. In fact, with closed eyes, it becomes more beautiful. With open eyes, if I was in place of Gautam Buddha, I will give everybody a magnifying glass that carry it. Whenever you come across a beautiful woman, just look. And then her eyes will look monsters. Her nose will become too big that no Jew can defeat. But this is not spirituality. Carrying a magnifying glass his restriction is nothing but repression. And a repressed person can never enter into his own being. Those repressed things and feelings and thoughts become a hard cell dividing him from himself, from his own origin. Only an unrepressed, thoughtless, silent being can break away the barrier and reach to his living source. And the moment you reach your living source, now you don't have to do anything. It does miracles. It starts changing your attitudes, your approaches. It starts changing everything that you have known about yourself. It brings to you a new beinghood. To find a master is easy if you are available. Not only to words, but to silences too. Not only to the words, because the truth never comes into words, but between the words. Between the lines, in the silent spaces. If you are searching a master, don't carry any criterion, a prejudice already. Be absolutely available so that when you come across a master, you can feel his energy. He carries a whole world of energy around him. his own experience radiates all around him. If you are open and not afraid of experiencing a new thing, of tasting something original, it is not very difficult to find a master. The difficulty is on your side. But Dzogchen's statement is right. It is difficult to meet prominent masters, whether men or women. There must be those who have realized something indescribable. That's what makes them a master. If they know something which cannot be described, if they have some experience which cannot be explained, the master is a mystery. He knows it, but he cannot say it. He can share it if you are ready. He can invite you in his own very being if you are unafraid and fearless, courageous enough to explore the most unknown part of existence. You can become a guest in the Master's home, but remember, the moment you enter into the Master's home, the Master enters into you. Two consciousnesses cannot remain separate. Once two consciousnesses come closer, they become one. And this is the only thing that has to be remembered. If with someone you feel a deep affinity, a deep synchronicity, as if one soul in two bodies, then don't miss this man. He is going to lead you to the same incredible, indescribable, inexpressible experience. This is the realization of the essence of the way. Finding the master is finding the way. Therefore, they lead and benefit others, setting aside no causality or making no difference between the self and others. A very famous Sufi mystic used to come in a place where I lived for 20 years, and his disciples always wanted me to meet their master. I said, the only way is, next time your master can stay with me, And the next time when the Sufi master came to stay with me, I asked him first thing, "Are you still Mohammedan?" He looked surprised and sad. He said, "Of course." I said, "Then you don't know the indescribable. These divisions between Mohammedans and Hindus and Jainas and Buddhists are divisions of the mediocres and retarded. But," he said, "I realize God. I see Him." I said, "It is all nonsense. Just Ananda has brought to me a very famous missionary in America. Has become more famous since he has declared this is a new species of priest, television priest, a new kind of a species, never had existed before. He declares that he sees God every night. He is 900 feet long." I told Ananda that write a letter to him from my side, that please tell me, do you carry a ladder and something to measure, or it is just guesswork? 900 feet, exactly. We think we live in 20th century. Even in America, people are not living in 20th century. Nothing to say of countries like India. Millions worship that man, and nobody even bothers that this is so stupid. Seeing this, another missionary started declaring that he also sees God, and he has a long white beard, so I have sent him my picture. That you don't be missing. It is me who used to visit you in your dreams. In the first place, if God is eternal, He cannot have white hairs. He will always be young. It is man who becomes old. He has even published the picture which almost is similar to me. So I have told him that just look at this picture. Just not to be recognized by everybody else, I am wearing the glasses. Otherwise, you have been seeing me in your dreams. Don't exploit people that you are seeing God. God is not an object. You cannot see God. God is your very consciousness. It is the seer, not the seen. It is you, not some object somewhere. It is your innermost center, which is the only eternal point, unchangeable, immortal, divine in its beatitude, in its blessings. And when you come close to a master, just remember one thing, withdraw all defenses, be as empty as possible, so that the master's energy can penetrate your being, can touch your heart. And it is an immediate realization. Just as you fall in love, you don't think about it, you don't consult libraries about love, you don't ask elders how to fall in love. There is no school who teaches how to fall in love. But people fall in love. It suddenly happens. Just as love happens suddenly on a lower level, on the physical and biological level, to find the master is another form of the highest love. The moment you come into the area of his influence, which is called Buddha field, the field of the master, you suddenly start throbbing with a new energy. You suddenly feel a new freshness, a new breeze passing through you, a new song which makes no sound. All that is left for you is to relax in deep gratitude. Don't even utter the word thank you, because that is separating. This is not the time to utter a word, just a gesture of gratitude. Once we have met a master, we must practice the way. If the master himself is the way, how do you practice? You simply watch how the master moves, what gestures he makes, how he responds to situations. Because he is every moment an absolute awareness, his every action is an indication of his innermost being. Watch him. Watch him when he is sleeping, watch him when he is waking, watch him when he is talking, watch him when he is sitting silently, doing nothing. Except watching the master with deep gratitude and love, absorbing his energy silently. It is almost like drinking water when you are thirsty. A deep feeling of contentment comes to you. Aloof from worldly relations and grudging a spare time, even in thinking, non-thinking and neutral thinking, therefore we should train ourselves as single-heartedly as if we were saving our head from a burning fire. A Zen master who has dropped away his body and mind is none other than ourselves. The Buddha and you, in your deepest consciousness, are one. The Upanishads declare Aham Brahmasmi, I am God. It is not out of any egoistic attitude. Because those people who wrote the Upanishads have not even signed. We don't know who wrote those Upanishads. And their statements are so clear that it is impossible to have an ego and such clear-cut statements about the truth. And when they declared Aham Brahmasmi, they are not declaring it for themselves only, they are declaring for everybody that you are the God. Don't search him anywhere else. You will not find him in any holy place. If you cannot find him within yourself, you cannot find him anywhere else. The moment you find him in you, he is all over. Then you will see him in the song of a cuckoo, or the chirping of the birds, or in a thunderbolt, or in this silence, then he is everywhere. Once you know him within you, you know him all over. The whole existence becomes one continent. The ego makes you small islands. And remember, no man is an island. Because even the small island deep down is joined with the continent. Just one has to go a little deep, dive a little deep. It is inevitably by sincerity and piety that we realize and receive the essence of our Master's love. This word la is a very difficult translation of the word dhamma. It gives a distorted view. Because the moment you hear the word la, you remember your course and constitution and your legal authorities. You don't remember by the word dhamma. And dhamma is Pali translation of the Sanskrit dharma. And dharma means fire is hot. It is the dhamma of fire. And ice is cold. It is the dhamma of ice. And you are a Buddha. It is the dhamma of you. Better translated, la should not be used as a translation for dhamma, but rather nature. It is your nature to be a Buddha. It does not matter that sometimes you forget. You can remain in forgetfulness for your whole life, or many lives, is still undercurrent the same Dhamma, the same Buddha, the same consciousness continues. Once it happened, George Bernardsa was traveling to some place from London, and the ticket checker came, and George Bernardsa looked into everything, turned his whole suitcase, and was perspiring because the ticket was not. Found, although he knew perfectly well that he has purchased the ticket. The man, the ticket checker, said, "Don't be worried, I know everybody knows you. You must have put it somewhere. Don't be worried. And I will take care of it that nobody harasses you." Bernardsa said, "That is not the problem, my boy. Ticket is not the problem. The problem is now how to know where I am going." "Do you think I am searching the ticket for you?" You can forget. Forgetfulness is part of our nature, just as remembrance is. Sometimes you all must have come to a point where you are trying to remember some old acquaintance name, and you say it is just on the tip of the tongue. What do you mean? If it is on the tip of the tongue, spit it out. You You know perfectly well that you know, but it is not coming to expression. The harder you try, the more difficult it will become. Because the harder you try, the narrow becomes the passage, mind becomes tense, and old memories cannot get through that tenseness. Finally, you give up and just start smoking. And while smoking, suddenly it comes. You cannot believe that I have been trying so hard, and I knew it is just on the tip of the tongue, and still I cannot express it. I say to you, the Buddha is just on the tip of your tongue. It is only a question of smoking a little. A little relaxation. That's what the smoking does. Psychologically, the people smoke cigarettes and cigars not knowing that it is simply their mother's breast. That's why it gives them so much relaxation. It is the nipple of the mother's breast from where comes a lukewarm milk to the child. From the cigarette, a lukewarm smoke comes in, and you have forgotten everything. You have become again a child, innocent, relaxed. No government can stop people from smoking, because it is not really the question of smoking. It has a deep psychology behind it. And you can see the psychology without much erudition. The poets sing about the woman's breast more than of anything else. The painters paint the woman's breast more than anything else. There are few painters who only paint woman's breast and nothing else. They go on improving. Why this obsession? Why this fixation? The reality is that more and more mothers are not willing to feed the child because to feed the child is to misshape the breast. The child goes on pulling, it makes the breast longer. And every woman wants the breast to be shapely, round, a full moon, and these young monsters, they won't allow. They are interested in their work, because around a sculpture's idea of a woman's breast will kill the child. If the breast is round, the child cannot have his nourishment. His nose will be closed. Either he can breathe or he can drink. Both together he cannot do. So all these Khajuraho paintings, statues, and all great painters, they don't understand the poor child's life is at stake. And every woman becomes interested, and now it is even being discussed in parliaments around the world that should women be forced to feed the child, or they should be given the freedom to choose themselves. No woman wants to distort her breast unless they find some technological device. It can be done. Just with a small pipe joint and the child is almost on the cigar from the very beginning. I always see simple solutions to very great problems. Just a small plastic pipe and the child will enjoy it, and he can continue to enjoy it later on also, because he is going to be in companionship with women. But nobody can prevent by law something which has a psychological root. Nobody can prevent you from becoming a Buddha, because it is your very nature. It is another matter that you get involved into small things of the world, of power, prestige, respectability, and you forget to give some time to yourself. Just a little time to yourself, forgetting the whole world, there is no need to renounce it. I am against renouncing anything. All the religions of the world have been religions of renunciation, because they wanted people to meditate, renounce the world, go to the mountains, to the forests, to the deserts, where nobody comes along. But that does not work. It did not work. Even if you go on a mountain, a crowd will follow you there, in your mind, not outside. Outside you will not see anybody, But with your closed eyes you will think about so many things. Your wife, your children, your old parents, your friends, and all kind of stupid things, Lions Club and Rotary Club. And things that you have never thought before will start coming to the mind, because having nothing else to chew, even chewing gum is not available, you have to chew something. People start thinking of strange things. But this is not realizing oneself. I am against renouncing the world. I want you to be in the world as totally as possible. Just once in a while, be on a holiday. Just in the early morning, for few moments, renounce everything, forget everything, and just be yourself. In the dark night, when everybody is asleep, sit in your bed and just be yourself. This is far more successful. The old renunciation was almost violent. Nobody has pointed it, because nobody wants to be condemned. But I am so much condemned that now I don't care. All the religions are responsible for millions of women who became widows, even their husbands were alive. Children became orphans, although their fathers were alive. Old parents became beggars because their young son, on whom they were dependent, has renounced the world. Nobody has counted how much harm the very idea of renunciation has done. And what is the gain? Just measure both. There seems to be no gain. All those who have renounced are simply dreaming about the same things, clinging in the same way, jealous in the same way, I was in the Himalayas and I was just going to sit under a tree, and from another tree a monk, a Hindu monk, shouted that, "Don't sit there, that belongs to my master." I said, "My God, even here in this forest, you have renounced the whole world, but you are not yet renounced the tree, and the tree belongs to nobody." He said, "I am warning you, he is a dangerous man." I said, "He has to be dangerous, because the very renunciation of the world can be done only by violent people." How can you leave the world? This is your very sea in which you are the fish. Leaving it, you will die. How a bird can leave the sky? This is his very world. If he leaves the sky, he will die. You cannot leave the world, but just on the margin, you can take few holidays, few moments for yourself, and nobody will even know about it. These small moments in which you drop the whole world as if it is a dream, and only your own being remains the only reality, are the greatest moments of joy, peace, silence, blissfulness. These moments are divine. In these moments, you are no more the ordinary human being. You have suddenly transcended humanness. You have transcended all form. You have entered into the formless existence. Your heart becomes the heartbeat of the whole existence. This is the only possible practice. Everything else is non-essential and dangerous. Be ordinary in every way, just keep few small spaces here and there. The world goes on. You don't interfere in it. Neither you escape from it. You participate in it. And with participation, you go on growing inside in those few moments. Remaining in the world and becoming a Buddha, that is my message. When someone has realized the great law and the essence of the Buddhas and patriarchs, we serve him reverently, prostrating ourselves. What we can do when somebody radiates consciousness, radiates the dance of existence, what we have to offer? In the West, people have always been concerned that why in the East people touch the feet of their masters. They don't know. It has become a traditional thing. Unfortunately, everything becomes traditional. But basically, essentially, it has a great beauty. It is not a question of feet. It is simply a question of gratitude, which cannot be said, but only by touching the feet of the master,
expressed.
Sakyamuni Buddha said, when you meet a master who expounds the supreme wisdom, do not consider his birth. Don't ask what caste he belongs. Don't ask what is his appearance. He may not look according to your ideas beautiful. He may not come from high caste, from Brahmins. He may be a Sudra like Kabir or Dadu. He may not have renounced a kingdom like Buddha and Mahavira, because everybody does not have a kingdom to renounce. I used to know a postmaster, a very poor man. He lived just nearby my house, so we used to talk once in a while. When his wife died, he had no children. He renounced the world. The same people who had never paid any attention to the poor man started touching his feet, and soon he became very famous. After 20 years I met him again through one of his disciples, who said that you should see him. I said, I know him. But they said, he has changed, he is a transformed man. He has renounced millions. I said, I know that in his post office he has kept 36 rupees only, from where he got millions. But rumors, and he was enjoying those rumors that he has. I said, I am coming to put him right to his senses. I asked him, please tell to your disciples how many rupees you have left in your post office book. He looked so sadly at me. He said, it will be better we meet separately alone, not with all these people. I said, I have to meet here before everybody, because these people think you have renounced millions. Now say clearly how many rupees. He said, 36. The disciples said, 36? And you never said to us before? He said, I enjoyed the idea that I have renounced millions, and I have never said anything. I simply did not deny it. So you cannot blame me. And I said, tell to these people the real thing. He said, what real thing? The real thing was that before he decided to renounce, he asked me to write for him 3 speeches. One for 10 minutes, one for 20 minutes, one for 30 minutes. He said, I will cram them completely and as the occasion, 10 minutes, then I will use one. If 20 minutes are available, I will use one. And I don't think more than 30 minutes will be available for me in conferences. I said, I am asking about those 3 speeches. Are you using them still or not? He said, my God, you have come here to kill me completely. These people think I am a realized man. I said, tell to these people that all those 3 speeches were written by me. He said, I have to accept. But he lost all his fame. Suddenly his disciples disappeared. Everybody started laughing about the whole thing, but 20 years continuously he maintained his great learnedness on those 3 speeches. I brought him back to home. I said, I need a gardener. You just do the garden and meditate with the plants, with the roses. And India has so much beautiful flowers, incomparable. Because the climate, the Indian rose has a fragrance that cannot be possible in a cold country. The fragrance is not released. It needs the sun. And India has so many beautiful flowers, unknown to the world. I had a beautiful garden, so I put him to work. He said, I was enjoying being an enlightened one. And unfortunately, somebody brought you there. In this old age now, I have to become a gardener again. I said, this is far more authentic. Just be a gardener. And it is a simple job. You can meditate and you can shower the water on the plants. The showering of water on the plants does not disturb your meditation. The flowers are not disturbing. The trees are very loving and very peaceful. I am giving you a really alive temple. Buddha is saying that when you meet a master, don't think about his birth, don't bother about his appearance, all that is needed a recognition that this is the man who has come to realize himself Everything else is non-essential. All that is needed now is a deep gratitude. It is a miracle to find such a man, and you have found it. Your gratefulness will bring a spring to your being. The Master's experience will start flowing towards you, just as rivers flow down from the mountains towards the ocean. Your gratefulness becomes just like an ocean, vast, available, and the Master's heights are like the mountains from where come the Ganges and thousands other rivers, running, rushing, jumping from rock to rock, from valley to valley, reaching towards the ocean. If you are with a Master, all that you need is a humbleness, a gratitude. And the Master is bound to pour Himself into you. Dzogchen continued, both men and women can realize the way. In any case, the realization of the way should be respected regardless of sex. This is an extremely excellent rule in the way. Even a little girl of 7 can become the teacher of the 4 classes of Buddhists, if the practices and realizing the Dhamma, we should make a venerative offering to her as to any Buddha. Neither age matters, nor birth matters, nor your country, nor your race. What matters is your awareness. And awareness is neither Hindu, nor Christian, nor Mohammedan. It is just a fire, eternal fire, invisible to the outside eye, but visible when you close your eyes and go inwards. A haiku runs, mountains of green, mountains of blue arise, my gratitude wells up and fills my eyes. Ryokan wrote, the thief left it behind, the moon at the window. The whole story is beautiful. This is just what he wrote after the thief has gone. One night a thief entered into Ryokan's small hut. Ryokan had only one blanket, which he used in the day to cover his body and in the night to cover his body. That was his only possession. He was lying down, but he was not asleep, so he opened his eyes and saw the thief entering. He felt great compassion for him because he knew there is nothing in the house. If the poor fellow had informed me before, I could have begged something from the neighbors and kept it here for him to steal. Now, in this night, what can I do? Seeing that there is nothing and he has entered into a monk's hut, the thief got out. Rayo Khan could not resist. He gave his blanket to the thief. The thief said, "What are you doing? You are standing naked. It is a very cold night." He said, "Don't be worried about me. But don't go empty-handed. You have made feel like a rich man. I have enjoyed this moment, but not only emperors have thieves in their palaces, my hut has become also a palace. Since a thief has entered, I have also become an emperor. In this joy, it is just a gift." Even the thief felt sorry for him and he said, "No, I cannot receive this gift because you don't have anything. How you are going to pass the night? It is too cold and it is getting colder." Rayo Khan said, with tears in his eyes, "That you remind me again and again of my poverty. If it was in my power, I would have taken out the full moon and given it to you." When the thief left, he wrote in his diary, "The thief left it behind, the moon at the window." These haikus are not ordinary poems. These are statements of deep meditativeness. Manisha has asked, "What is the essence of our master's law?" Manisha, here I am not. Just an empty space. A hollow bamboo. If you want to join with me, nothing else is needed. Just be utterly empty and silent. This is your master's Dhamma. And in fact, this is all the master's Dhamma. Become a hollow bamboo, so that you can be turned into a flute and songs of immense beauty can pass through. through you. They will not be your sons, they will be sons of existence. Before we enter into today's meditation, the bamboos are very silent and waiting for your laughter. My gardeners have informed me that they have never seen bamboos growing so faster. And particularly as the evening arrives, they all start jumping up. They are participants. They meditate with you. They cannot say anything. But saying does not matter. They understand your laughter, certainly. Bruno Meatball, a truck driver, is trying to change a flat tire by the side of the road. He is hammering away with all his might, cursing and swearing with each unsuccessful blow. The village priest is passing by and decides to help him. He sits down by the side of Bruno and said to him that, "I will pray to God and all miracles are possible." And he started offering a prayer . But when confronted with trouble, finally the meatball says that he is willing to try anything just to get the tire off the wheel. So they both kneel beside the truck and pray again. When Bruno goes back to work, he gives the tire one blow and almost jumps off by itself. The priest looks on in amazement and cries, "Well, I will be fucked." Mr. and Mrs. Polite live in a nice big house in proper town, USA. And they are really polite. When Mrs. Polite brings Mr. Polite his dinner, he says, "Thank you so much, darling." And Mrs. Polite says, "Ah, you are so welcome, sweetheart. Actually, I should thank you for being such a lovely husband to serve." Then Mr. Polite says, "No, I should doubly thank you for being such a lovely wife," and so on. Anyway, they are all so polite that one evening Mr. Polite sees a lonely middle-aged fellow standing in the rain. Politely, he invites the stranger into the house for a nice hearty meal. 2 hours later, Mr. Polite stumbles across the stranger making love in the hallway to their lovely daughter, Pussy Polite. upon seeing this, Mr. Polite says very politely, "Pussy dear, where are your manners? Arch your back and help the gentleman to get his balls off this cold marble floor." After many attempts, Gilbert Goldditch finally manages to get Gorgeous Gloria to go to his apartment with him. After a few drinks, Gilbert puts on some soft music and they settle down on the sofa. A few minutes later, Gloria says, "You know, Gilbert, you are the first man I have met whose kisses make me sit up and open my eyes." "Really?" says Gilbert happily. "Yes," replies Gloria. "Usually they have the opposite effect." Mikhail Gorbachev gets up in the morning and goes out onto his balcony to get some fresh air. The sun is rising. "Good morning, red sun," he exclaims. "Long live Mikhail Gorbachev," the sun replies. Very happy with this, Gorbachev goes about his business. After a busy morning, he goes out onto his balcony again and sees the sun at its height. "Good afternoon, sun," he shouts out. "Long live Comrade Gorbachev, General Secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union," replies the sun. Very pleased, Gorbachev returns to his work. That evening, after a hard day, he comes out once again onto his favorite balcony. He sees the sun setting and with a smile he cries out, "Good evening, my little son." "I am in the West now," replies the sun, "so fuck you." Give the beat.
be silent. Close your eyes. Feel your body frozen. And just go in. Deeper and deeper. At the deepest is your immortal self. Don't be afraid of the unknown. Rush towards the center like an arrow. Just don't stop on the periphery, because only at the center where nothing moves, you are a Buddha. To make it more clear, Nivedana, relax, let go. Forget the body, forget the mind, just remember that you are pure consciousness, just an awareness. And without going a single step anywhere, you have arrived home. Nivedana, come back, but come back as Buddhas and sit down for a few moments, remembering rejoicing making a contact that in your every activity this consciousness will always be like an undercurrent. Once this experience of Buddhahood becomes a solid experience, it expresses in all your activities, in your words, in your silences, in your days, in your nights,
it becomes your constant companion. Ultimately, you deserve the final disappearance, and only the Buddha remains. A pure awareness is the most beautiful lotus that has ever blossomed. Can we celebrate the 10,000 Buddhas?
Yes.